In England and Wales, the government is taking an axe to one of the oldest pillars of the justice system, jury trials, where thousands of cases every year are set to be scrapped. Only the most serious crimes, murder, rape, trafficking and the like, will still go before 12 citizens in a jury box. Everything else, judge-only courts, swift courts, a justice system redesigned at speed. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Tara Duggan. So the UK says it has no choice. Court blockages have hit 78,000 cases and are on track, according to the Ministry for Justice there, to reach 100,000 cases by 2028. David Lammy told MPs the changes would get cases heard a fifth faster and stop defendants gaming the system as victims walk away from delayed prosecutions in record numbers. But critics say it's the beginning of the end for a centuries-old right, that right to be judged by your peers. And here in Ireland, we're having our own reckoning, including a proposal to abolish juries in the High Court defamation cases and a plan to replace the Special Criminal Court with a permanent standalone non-jury court. To explore all of this, I'm joined by barrister and co-host of The Fifth Court, Peter Leonard. You're very welcome back to News Talk Daily.
Thank you, Tara. Delighted to be here.
Now, before we get into the stories that are in the news, talk to me about why we're so fascinated by courtrooms and the workings of juries and the justice system. The TV and film rankings, if they're anything to go by, we just can't get enough of it.
If it wasn't for courtroom dramas, I think Hollywood would have gone out of business years ago. I think people are fascinated by the whole idea of the courtroom because generally something wrong has been done. Did the person do it? And all of that that kind of involves. And then you have very famous dramas like 12 Angry Men, for example, where the workings of a jury as ordinary people trying to figure out what happened, engage with each other, powerful personalities emerge, try and persuade others, all of that sort of stuff. It kind of is fascinating. I think jury trials particularly are of great interest. And obviously, as you say, they go back forever and ever. I mean, you know, in the common law system, which we in Ireland have, which was kind of related to the fact that we were once part of the UK, etc., they have the common law and the American system as well. Juries are hugely prevalent in that, not so much in the continental civil code system. So they have been very, very important. And it goes all the way back to the famous Magna Carta, Tara. So that's 1215, which sort of gave us the laws. And it was the starting kind of a constitution for people's rights, property rights and liberty rights, going back that far. And basically that said that nobody could lose their property or their liberty without the assessment of their peers and in accordance with law. So that brought in the famous word peers. So you're judged by your peers.
Let's get down to business. Tell me about what's happening in England and Wales and why it's concerning so many people.
Okay, so basically what they're trying to do is restrict jury trials in the UK. And I think that has been introduced now by the Justice Secretary, David Lammy. So basically, he's following up on a report that was produced by a fellow called Brian Levinson, very famous for the Levinson Inquiry into the News of the World and all those newspaper stories. And there was a recommendation because the system is creaking in Britain. There's been a lack of investment over the years in Britain, and obviously it's a huge country. And there is a backlog officially, I think, at the moment of 78,000 trials. People might have to wait a couple of years before their trial comes for a hearing, which obviously is very concerning for victims, but also for defendants. If you are accused of something, you have that hanging over you for so long. So I think it was an approach to try, and it's a practical approach really, to try and speed up the process. A jury trial is deemed to take 20% longer in terms of time than a trial that's heard by a judge alone.
So why is that?
Well, I suppose because there are certain aspects to the jury has to be impaneled, and that can be a big process, and we can talk about that and all that goes into that, you know, people objecting to jurors and all that sort of stuff.
I want to because we, you know, all of us will have friends and family who've been called for jury duty. And for some people, they're delighted. They're more than happy to play their civic role. For others, it's like they're hell-bent on just getting out of it.
Yes, of course.
So talk a little bit about the process and the complications that arise in selecting a jury.
Okay, well, if we look at the Irish system, everybody, all people on the electoral register are eligible to serve on a jury, except in certain circumstances. For example, people like myself who work in the legal profession, we're exempt teachers are exempt, and there's various guards are exempt. There's people like that that are exempt, but everybody else is on the panel. And you get a little letter. It goes to the county councils. The county registrar will identify individuals, and you get a letter, and you're required to attend at the courthouse for the call over, the jury call over. So what would happen, let's say, in a circuit court or in the high court, people are called to the courthouse and their names will be called out. And then they have to kind of go up and sit on the bench. Now, in the Irish system, you're allowed to object. Each side has 7 objections. So this is a very interesting science, Tara, and I think none of us really have it properly worked out. We all think we know who we don't want or who we might want, etc. It's not like the American system. I mean, you might have seen, going back to Hollywood again, Runaway Jury with Gene Hackman, where they put in a big effort into selecting juries, and you can quiz people in the American system to decide whether they're for you or against you, you know, for this. But in Ireland, we don't. All we know is you get a list of the people that have been called. You might get their ages, you might get their occupations. That's as much information as you get. So it will be the solicitor who will decide whether they want to object to somebody who's been called, and they'll do that basically on observation. So somebody comes in who's, let's say, maybe looks sort of conventionally respectable and, you know, is of a certain age, they might think, well, they're going to be pro our side more likely than somebody who comes in with earrings and tattoos. I'm using every stereotype in the
book
here.
Sure, but I mean, that's what we need to know.
This is what people are doing.
Yeah.
So that's what happens. So you can object to 7 people. And people then can also say to the judge, look, I'm in difficulty. I am away. This is a long, long established holiday that I had planned and it's going to interfere with that. I have to go for a medical operation. Or maybe they might have a pressing reason. And most judges are very fair about that. They won't force somebody in if they don't really want to do it. But you can't say, I don't want to do it. That doesn't exist. You must do it. It's your constitutional obligation to do it.
So say, for example, you have to care for a relative. You're a carer and it's just not going to be possible for you to do it. That will be deemed an acceptable reason to.
It could be by the judge.
Yourself.
The judge has full discretion. So the judge could say, yeah, or the judge could say, no, sorry, no, we have carers coming in every day of the week and we need you to come in and do your duty by the state, but they can sort of give them a pass on that as well.
And when you go in and you're potentially one of the jurors that's going to be selected, a trial could take 3 days, a trial could take 3 weeks.
Yes.
Or a trial could take 3 months.
It's as long as a piece of string. So yes, it can go, it can run and run and run, and you must be there for that. Sometimes in the eventuality that somebody will get ill, or something might happen to somebody, they might select 2 or 3 extra jurors if they believe it's going to be a long trial.
Yeah, okay.
So that's again a practical consideration.
And from a juror's or a potential juror's perspective, I mean, are their employers expected to pay them while they're sitting on a jury?
Yes, they are. No, they're expected because it's a constitutional obligation to serve on the jury, and therefore if you're required to do that, you must get your salary while you're on the jury.
And so I can understand very clearly the reason why a Garda or a solicitor or a member of the legal profession wouldn't be a suitable jury member and would be dismissed. Why a teacher? Is it because of the potential time commitment?
I think it's because community involvement. And I think, again, it's a practical consideration. So, for example, once upon a time, kind of jurors were kind of recruited from their own area. So let's say the circuit court is sitting in Athlone, okay? And you're drawing people from the greater Westmeath, Roscommon area. You know, a teacher goes in, potentially they'll have dealt with hundreds of pupils over the years. They're well known in the community. I'd say the parish priest gets a pass as well. I can't officially say that, but I'm just saying it. So it's that sort of role where it would be compromising and it's not as easy for that person to serve. And remember, a juror must be impartial. Back in the good old days, Tara, I mean, up until the mid-1970s, there was a wonderful woman called Maureen de Burka who took a case, a Supreme Court case. And up until then, women were exempt from serving on juries. Women were exempt. Now, it wasn't that they couldn't serve on juries.
Okay.
They were just given an exemption. And she made the point that in the previous 10 years, only 2 women had ever served on a jury. So she said that if she goes before the court, she is the jury, it must be a jury of her peers. But her peers were just being confined to men. So this was very unfair, lack of equality. And she took a case to the Supreme Court. And as a result of that, the gender discrimination that existed in the Irish jury system was lifted. I mean, that's the mid-1970s, not that long ago.
No, it's not that long ago.
But the idea is that you are assessed by a jury of your peers, and that should be everybody from the community, you know, rich, poor,
young,
infirm,
old,
whatever it is, female. And also nationalities should be reflected as well, if they're Irish citizens, of course, you know.
Sure. How central is a jury trial in the Irish judicial system?
Well, it is huge because, like, there's a constitutional entitlement to have a jury trial in a criminal case if it's for a non-minor offence. So, for example, if something is deemed to be a minor offence, it can be heard in the district court, and that's protected under Article 38(5) of the Irish Constitution. So a circuit court judge can send somebody to jail for up to a year on the basis of a summary offence, which is deemed to be a less serious offence.
And give us some examples of that.
Well, I mean,
what type of offences?
Serious road traffic accident, an assault case, you know, a larceny offence, stealing, that would be at a lower level than something, and, you know, a kind of an assault that's not an aggravated assault. But then once it goes beyond that, it goes into the Circuit Criminal Court. So all cases other than murder and rape are dealt with in the Circuit Criminal Court. Murder and rape go to the Central Criminal Court, which is the equivalent of the High Court. All of those, they are deemed to be indictable offences, and they have to be assessed by a jury. And that's constitutionally protected. And there's no plan to interfere with that at all in Ireland, unlike our cousins across the water.
So let's talk about our most famous non-jury court, because we have one here. It is the Special Criminal Court. It was initially set up in response to terrorism,
yes,
the domestic terrorism threat. In recent years, it's been handling gang crime.
Yes.
So how does that work?
Okay, so basically that came in 1939 under the Offences Against the State Act, which was brought in during the famous emergency when Ireland was, you know, in the course of the Second World War, and there was deemed to be potentially kind of Republican terrorists at large in society, etc. This was brought in as a kind of, because people felt the juries in the certain circumstances, the administration of justice would be interfered with potentially, and that's why you couldn't allow a jury to hear these cases. So it effectively kind of lay dormant until the early 70s, when obviously the troubles in the north, and then there was a lot of paramilitary activity north and south of the border. So it was brought in at that stage. So effectively what happens is it's presided over by a high court judge, so a judge who would normally sit in the Central Criminal Court, and then they are joined by a circuit court judge and a district court judge. They form the court, obviously, but they also form the jury. So they're serving both roles. So they have to listen to the evidence and make a finding of fact. Remember, a jury is only charged with finding a fact. They find whether somebody is guilty or not guilty. They have no role in sentencing, for example. Mm-hmm. So in the Special Criminal Court, the judges initially sit as the jury to decide whether it happened, whether the person is guilty or not guilty. And then they kind of do the kind of the follow-on judicial role, which is then to decide whether there's an appropriate sentence. So it's a very controversial way of kind of running a court case, because people say the tradition is a jury of your peers, that, you know, the public at large get to decide whether somebody is guilty or not. That's not happening here. And for example, in a normal jury trial, you would have a thing called a voir dire, where, for example, there's a legal point, and then the jury would be sent out of the room, and the barristers start having a row amongst themselves with the judge as to what they're doing, and the judge makes a ruling. And if the judge then says that piece of information can be admissible, the jury are told about it. But if the judge says no, it can't be because it's prejudicial, then the jury is not told about it. But if you have three judges sitting there, they hear everything. So they hear the applications, pro and against, all of that sort of stuff. So it is one of these things that is deemed to be sort of contrary to civil liberties. The Irish Council for Civil Liberties criticise it all the time. Sinn Féin were totally opposed to it for a very long time. No longer.
Became a bit of a political football.
Yes, it did. And it was kind of a hard one for them to defend because it now is used mainly for gangland. For example, the Jerry Hutch trial recently.
Okay. And also, for example, the Limerick gangs that we would have heard,
yes,
of many years ago. And why and when did that become part of the Special Criminal Court's remit?
Basically, the Special Criminal Court was set up to ensure the kind of the safe and appropriate administration of justice. And it was deemed that by putting people who are deemed to be very dangerous in society and asking a jury to go in and listen to these trials, that they could be intimidated by it. So again, it was a practical consideration, and there was provision made for this in the Constitution, and therefore that's why it was allowed. So that is how it has evolved. We don't really have any more paramilitary activity in Ireland. There are some kind of dissident groups, etc., still, sure, at large, but very little. They're even taking the soldiers off the roof in Portlaoise prison, you know, because there's less people on that wing, etc. So it has changed. Irish society has changed. So now it's primarily for very serious criminals. But the courts, I mean, obviously the Special Criminal Court, the judges that are doing it are experts, And they are skilled in the art of, you know, compartmentalizing the law in relation to that. And they do know how to say, OK, we made a decision on the admissibility of that piece of evidence, but that doesn't mean that we're going to accept it. And that, you know, so they can do that. They are very, very skilled in relation to that. But it does create question marks. And that's why civil liberties organizations criticize it on a regular basis. But then you see in the Hutch case, he was acquitted by the Special Criminal Court. Mm-hmm. And they were very clear in the reason why he was acquitted. The evidence wasn't there.
Yeah. Now, the Special Criminal Court itself does look set to be replaced. It'll be another non-jury court. What exactly is the government proposing here?
It's not really clear. It's kind of being debated currently at the moment. There was a recommendation made. A very well-known judge, retired judge of the Court of Appeal, Michael Peart, carried out a report in relation to this and did an investigation and reported to the government. And the Minister of Justice, Jim O'Callaghan, seems to be positively disposed towards this. We still haven't seen the details of it, but it would be a form of the Special Criminal Court continuing and being more established and kind of being firmly fixed going forward. But we don't know much more than that at the moment. It's still to be debated. It'll be like the defamation bill, which is going through series after series of questions in the Iraq. This one will as well.
Arose by any other name?
Yes, well, there you go. So it more or less will be the same. I think it will be arose by any other name, but we don't know the details yet.
So you mentioned there about the High Court defamation actions. We're not going down the UK road just yet anyway, certainly in abolishing juries from criminal cases, but we are in terms of defamation. Why?
Yes. Well, this is, again, we refer to the Minister for Justice there, Jim O'Callaghan, who had a very busy practice acting in defamation cases, a very, very successful and very, very expert lawyer. And he was a big fan of the juries. And now that he's Minister for Justice, he might have changed his tune a little bit. But that's the realities of being part of the government. So the suggestion at the moment is there's a defamation bill that's currently being debated. As I said, it's in the Senedd and it's been held up in the Senedd at the moment. And that suggests getting rid of juries for defamation cases. Juries were prevalent in Ireland up until 1988 in relation to all personal injuries cases. So if you had gone in, if you'd hurt yourself in a car accident or you had a fall at work or whatever, that had to be determined by a jury. And they got rid of that because they felt juries were too generous to plaintiffs, I suppose. And maybe similarly in terms of defamation, juries have given huge awards. The most recent one being Dennis O'Brien in that case. And the interesting thing about that award was it followed on from a case called Higgins against the Irish Aviation Authority. And that was a decision of Mr. Justice McMenamin in the Supreme Court. And he tried to put some structure on the level of damages that could be awarded. And the maximum damages, he said, should be 300,000, unless in absolutely exceptional circumstances. Mm-hmm. But 300,000 should be it. In this instance, Dennis O'Brien and his PR guy, James Morrissey, former journalist, both of them were, the jury awarded the two solicitors who took the case damages against both in the sum of 820, 410 each, I think, thereabouts. And it was on the basis of 300,000, which was the max they could award, plus aggravated damages, which you're entitled to award on top of that, of another 110. So that was a particularly high award. And Dennis O'Brien has now appealed that award. But I think the feeling would be that a judge sitting alone would not award that level of damages, and they would give a much more measured amount of damages. Like in some of the libel trials, if you go back over the years, you know, very famous case, 1997, Eamon Dunphy against Prunchester Rossiter, very, very famous case. On that occasion, think of, you know, the value of money in 1997. Mm-hmm. Prunchester Rossiter was awarded £300,000, old money in those days. And I mean, that was deemed to be a huge amount of money. It went to the Supreme Court. Independent newspapers appealed that, but the Supreme Court said, no, it's a matter for the jury, and left it alone. Subsequently, there was the famous case of Monica Leach.
Yes, I was going to bring that one up.
So she was awarded £1.87 million against independent newspapers in the High Court by a jury in relation to certain comments that have been made that were defamatory, etc. But that's a huge amount of money. It went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, OK, we're going to reduce it, but only down to £1.2 million. I mean, so that was a lot of money for having sort of a comment put out there that she had the opportunity in court to show wasn't true. And obviously, a person's reputation is very important. But if you're in a car accident or something and you end up in a wheelchair for life, you will only get a fraction of that in terms of compensation. So they're sometimes balancing the amount of compensation that is available, Cara, and that's a factor.
So look, the reason behind the changes in the UK, they say, are the fact that the wheels of justice are turning so slowly and there's such a huge delay in cases. It can also be very, very expensive. Do you ever see Ireland, because we have delays in court proceedings here, we have huge delays in court proceedings here. Do you ever see Ireland at a point where we're debating this, leaning towards introducing those changes?
Well, if you follow trends, I mean, it's a bit like, you know, in terms of getting rid of juries in defamation cases, that seems to be mirroring, you know, a development that happened in the UK in 2013. Will, if there is a backlog of cases here, you know, that sort of a mood come on, or a kind of a practical administrative reason to kind of try and change things come into play? The only thing is, it is constitutionally protected in Ireland. So that's really, really important. Really important. Article 38.5, and we're all protected by the Constitution, Tara. It's very, very important. So they would have to shift that. If they wanted to kind of change the grounds for, you know, jury trials, etc., we'd have to have one of those wonderful things called a referendum. And that would have to be debated. So I don't see it happening. I think the way the system works here, a lot of matters, most cases are dealt with in the district court. You know, somebody hasn't paid fines, somebody hasn't done this, somebody hasn't done that, somebody has been a bit aggressive in the pub after hours, etc., etc. That can be dealt with in the district court. And, you know, most people aren't sent to jail, you know, first offences, all that sort of stuff. For more serious offences, I think, I mean, it's entirely appropriate that it is tested before a proper jury, a jury of the individual's peers. The prosecution must make the case. The defendants get the opportunity to challenge the case that's made. Let the jury decide. So I don't think there's any mood in Ireland to interfere with the criminal jury system. But as we know, the defamation jury system and the civil jury system for defamation cases potentially is on its last legs. But we have to see what the Oireachtas does yet.
If there are delays, and there are delays, and we know that, we're seeing, for example, the shifts in our hospital system whereby consultants work over the weekends. The court system goes on holiday for a number of months every summer. It takes breaks at Easter. It takes breaks over Christmas.
You're becoming very controversial there now.
Well, I am being controversial, but does it not strike you as being somewhat common sense?
Don't interfere with our holidays.
That maybe if the court sat year round, if the court sat at weekends, if the court had late sittings into the evening.
Yes.
That could help resolve the issue.
You are right. And I mean, the court system can be criticised for kind of long periods when the courts don't sit. Though that is changing a lot. I mean, once upon a time, the courts shut down for kind of August and September. Now, pretty much in September, it's busy enough. Maybe it's not.
I'm not sure about that.
It's not maybe the full agenda. And courts are always there in emergency situations. District court runs all the time. Yes, you know, maybe that's something that could happen down the line if there's a backlog. But I don't see that being a problem, and I don't see that being something that is kind of prevalent in society at the moment. But I would say that, wouldn't I?
You would indeed. Peter Leonard, thank you very much for your insights. A great chat and really interesting to get to know background, I think, about the courts. We all hear about the courts, but an awful lot of people don't understand them because it is quite highbrow. And it is quite remote, so I think it's good to have these conversations. That's it for today's News Talk Daily. If you have thoughts on jury trials, whether you've ever served on one, whether you trust them, whether judge-only courts feel safer to you, well, we'd love to hear from you. Drop us an email, newstalkdaily@newstalk.com. That's the News Talk Daily, court adjourned for today, and indeed for this week. Don't forget you can listen back to this and all of our episodes on the Go Loud app. But for me, Tara Duggan, for now, have a great weekend.